Your On the Mark podcast is loading now. The On the Mark podcast is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company, family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Joe McGranahan.
Greetings and welcome on board the WKOK live telephone talk show, On the Mark. I'm Mark Lawrence, subpar host of the show, superlative co-host. On the other side of the table here is Mr. Joe McGranahan. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at you. You're strikingly handsome today.
And?
In a woodsy kind of way.
Flannelly.
And flannelly, yes.
Flannelly. I have flannel-lined blue jeans and...
You're layered, I see. You have a turtleneck.
Turtleneck
on and your little flannel shirt.
My lovely bride.
You remind me of Tim Allen on Tool Time.
My lovely bride picked out this outfit. She said, this will be good.
I could tell, because normally you come in dressed like a mafia hitman when you pick out your own clothes.
What does a mafia hitman dress like?
I don't know. That's what my wife always says to me, that if left to my own devices, I would dress like a mafia hitman.
Well, you probably would, yeah, with that goofy white hat.
I just thought I'd pass it on to you.
Thank you. That's funny. Yeah, no, my lovely bride says this is kind of woodsy, but it's office casual because the jeans aren't terribly faded.
It is woodsy. You look like you should have an axe in your hand.
Oh, maybe I do.
Go cut down tree.
I have a pocket knife.
That's dangerous. You packing?
I have a little...
You don't have your gun with you today, do you?
No, but I know where it is. Okay. That's all that really counts.
That's cheerful news.
Yeah, boy. All right, yes. What do we want to say here? Oh, yeah, Governor Tom Wolf thinks that if you buy a shotgun at a gun show, you don't have to do a background check. It's funny how he comes out with a proposal, and I think if you want to expand universal background checks, as the whole country is, this is a debate you should have, you know, and some people think that's a bad idea, and some people say it's a good idea, okay. But when the governor comes out and says something silly, like if you buy a shotgun at a gun show, you don't need a background check, well, what kind of credibility do you need for that? Every gun that's purchased at a gun show, you have to have a background check. Every single one. Unless you do it out in the parking lot, in which case, it doesn't have to be at a gun show. It could be at any parking lot.
If you're doing something illegal, you can do it anywhere.
Right. Exactly. Well, actually, it's not illegal to do private transactions.
Well, the governor's doing that. I mean, he's obviously... The Democratic Party is moving so far to the left, it's becoming almost unrecognizable as a mainstream political entity.
Well, universal background checks is not a far-left proposal.
No,
it's as mainstream as can be.
He wants to raise the minimum wage. People are shouting Medicare for all without any regard to the cost. Free education. Everybody wants their free stuff.
Well, the governor's not calling for those things. He did call for an increase in the minimum wage to $12 an hour, but we can talk about that.
Yeah, we've been up and down that road. We plowed that field thoroughly.
It's funny. I just love Jake Corman. Of course, he's in a good mood, you know. I mean, life is good when you run the Senate. And he just sits there smiling, you know. He's like, oh, sure. Go ahead, the governor. No, we're not raising the minimum wage. He, like, laughs. He's like, oh, yeah, the governor's wonderful proposal. No, we're not raising the minimum wage. Sorry. So
at some point, it probably should be raised to adjust for inflation at some point. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think that some of these proposals...
Well, $15 an hour, that's a little high.
It is a little high, and it will just take jobs away from young people. It's sad, you know, because I can see both sides of the argument. You want people to make enough money, but you can't have the minimum wage. You always hear people on the left saying, well, we need decent family-sustaining minimum wage. Well, that isn't going to happen. You know, there's got to be some correlation between what you bring to the table and what you take away.
Value added?
Yeah,
huh?
Well, there has to be.
Right.
I mean, because you woke up this morning, do you deserve to be $20,000 a year richer?
Well, I do, but this is not about me. Okay, so let's keep this.
Well, we could make it about you. Well, let's make it about you.
All right. I don't mind that. That's a good idea. All right, well, we have open phones today. We're going to introduce the show. The governor's minimum wage proposal certainly is top of the mind. And Kevin was in here, he's fully in support of it. He thinks it's a good idea as soon as possible to get it up to $15
an hour. Trying to give Kevin a heart attack?
Well, I want him to come in and express his viewpoints here, so he should. Now is his opportunity. Mic number three is open. I'm turning it up so that it's amplified. It's ready to go. Well, he's probably in the sales office.
My jacket's over the back of that chair.
Okay, well, don't lean back. All right, 1-800-795-9565. Not just random digits that I keep blurting out. It is the Hometown Pharmacy's toll-free line. 1-800-795-9565 is now open. Oh, here he wasn't in. He pushes open the door with,
sit in my chair.
With force.
Challenge accepted.
Let me introduce the show, but yeah, get your headphones set up here. The toll-free line is sponsored by the Shade Mountain Pharmacy in Mount Pleasant Mills, the Norrie Pharmacy, Danville Pharmacy, Lewisburg Pharmacy, Bloomsburg Medicine Shop, and Trutz Pharmacy in Mifflinburg. You can email us at onthemarketwkok.com and text us at 70236. I can irritate Kevin by saying this, and we don't sell you anything when we send you a Text Connect message, because he always says...
We don't sell you anything, but we'll let you know about some great things that you can take advantage of.
We might someday. We're not at the moment, but yeah, it is available.
Also, now Text Connect may go commercial.
What?
What are you talking about?
Oh, yes, it could be. It could be in the future that if some good advertiser steps forward and says, I would like the Text Connect message to be sponsored by Evangelical Community Hospital, then you'd get a Text Connect message that would maybe have those words in it. But that's not right now anyway.
But sometimes you can actually win something.
Well, right. Well, yeah, there's all this. Let's not get a Text Connect question started. It's a way to super serve the audience.
Well, you wouldn't
sell
me the list. I wanted to buy the list from you. And now all of a sudden you're telling me you're going to take commercials on it?
No, that one I'll support and endorse.
Yeah,
Mark
Joe has.
On. Yeah.
We got him down to $600 for the phone list, so that's not bad. What is it, about 1,000 people now on it?
Well, yeah. I thought I could buy you off for a pie from Tudor Pie House.
I have a price. I have a price. You're in the range. All right, we want to tell you about the Sunbury Motor Company. They sponsor our program, and they sell Ford cars and trucks. Kevin always buys an all-wheel drive smaller Ford, but you can buy a great big one or any Ford. Expedition, Excursion, Explorer, Escort, you name it. They would take good care of you. They call that the E-Series, incidentally. Hyundai, of course, if you haven't seen the Veloster, it is just a super sharp-looking vehicle and ultra-fast, and all the gasoline mileage on some of these smaller vehicles, he is in the 30s on the highway. Kia, super-duper vehicle. I got a Sorento all picked out in that ruby red that they sell. And Lincoln, cars and trucks. My Lincoln Navigator pickup truck is
to match
ordered.
Your slippers?
Yes, it does.
Ruby red slippers?
Yes, it
You're
does.
Going back to get Toto and go back to Kansas?
And your little dog, too.
Right. If I Toto my car, I'll go get a Lincoln. Oh. That's what we'll do. So, all right, and that's the Sunbury Motor Company, and that's what they got. And they got them on the lot, and if you cannot find what you want, you can build a Ford car or truck or Hyundai or Kia or Lincoln to your precise specifications. Okay. Governor Tom Wolf rolling out his proposal. People get excited about this because the governor says, I'm going to raise the minimum wage to $12 an hour. And then you look in the office of Jake Corman where he's watching the announcement on TV. He's literally shaking his head no. So that is the end of this discussion. But everybody likes to have a minimum wage discussion anyway.
Sure, the governor's safe to propose raising it to $5,000 an hour because it's not going to pass.
I think it's a fabulous idea because a lot of people who are earning the minimum wage also have to be on assistance. So you can either pay them now or pay them later. But all the haves that are in this room say, don't do it. It might hurt me.
Kevin and I agree on this because it's not true. You know, everybody on the left always makes fun of trickle-down economics. But this is trickle-up economics. You raise the minimum wage, everything else goes up. The people who are making $15 an hour now want $20 an hour.
So you're saying that this could actually lead to people being paid what they're worth?
It could lead to inflation, and that's not good for anybody.
Well, you don't have to have inflation. Go ahead, Kevin.
Listen, I think if you're going to raise the minimum wage, it has to be done at the state level first off. This is not a national issue. This is a state issue. Every state has a different economy. Every state's value of a dollar right now or cost of living is different. So if you're going to raise a minimum wage, do it at the state level. Secondly, you're talking about a pretty big jump right now. I mean, you're talking going up to $15?
Well, 12 immediately.
But you're talking about going up to $15. That's doubling it from where it is right now. So my question is exactly what Joe said. The person that's making $20 an hour, the value of that $20 isn't what it was. you know, I'm worth $20 because minimum wage is $7 and I'm this much better than a minimum wage employee.
And I've lost ground compared to where I was before.
Correct. And that's going to be the next argument you have. I have no problem raising minimum wage, and I agree with you, Mark. I do think that there is a situation where people that are on minimum wage end up using other assistance programs that cost money as well, and that could limit the amount of people on those assistance programs. However, understand the consequences across the board. The consequences across the board are everybody's going to want to raise, not just the people on minimum wage, and everything is going to go up. That dollar menu at the fast food restaurant is not going to be a dollar anymore. It's going to be $2 or $3 menu. And it already has already started that process.
Well, I've seen some of the fast food places around here actually advertising as high as $9 an hour.
Yes.
You know, because they can't get people
because
at the lower
rate. Right.
And that's the marketplace determining what your value is, and that's the way it always should be.
Why don't we... So you both agree that it should go up a little soon.
Well, no, I'm saying that I think if natural forces in the economy drive it up, that's great. You know, right now, if I can't find anybody to work for $7 an hour, I'm going to have to pay more. And that's what we're seeing. A lot of these places, if you look at the help wanted signs you see along the strip, they'll say starting at $9 an hour, $10 an hour.
I saw a sign yesterday.
Yeah.
Help wanted, $10 an hour to start.
Put yourself in the shoes of someone that is making making $12 right now. The minimum wage goes up to $12. Do you feel that you should be making minimum wage? Because you were making $12 when minimum wage was $7.
Yeah.
So, all right, percentage-wise, should I be making $17 now?
I think you all make good points, but I just happen to know that there are individuals who are earning the minimum wage who are really struggling to make ends meet. And some of them qualify for food stamps and like subsidized housing and so on because they work full-time, they earn minimum wage, and they're not making enough. So it just seems to me that you can either pay me now or kind of pay me later, as if I were on the minimum wage and was getting these assistance. You can either mandate that the company pay me a family-sustaining wage or a living wage for me anyway, and that I don't have to go on subsidized, or I can't take advantage of subsidized. Of course, you don't have to. So this is an opportunity to help that individual.
What jobs are they filling? In other words, what talents do they bring? If they have no marketable skills.
Boy. Let's see. Who do I know that's on?
Yeah, I understand
what you're
saying. If they have no marketable skills.
Dishwashing is one of them. There's a custodian.
If a dishwasher is making $7 an hour and suddenly goes to $12, the person who manages the dishwasher, he was making $12. What happens to him?
Well, if he is bringing more than $12 value, then he should be paid more than much. He should ask for that. You know, you guys talk about all these workers that if the minimum wage were to become fairer, that all these people that are earning X wage will be made to suffer. Well, they should do what you guys are describing. Go out and take a job that pays the right wage for them and that recognizes their value.
Permit me to turn that around then. Why shouldn't the person who's making the $7 an hour work at developing skills that take them beyond that rate?
Well, there is a group of workers in this world that you guys don't know anything about, or that you don't know anything about them, that they don't have that kind of mobility that you describe.
And I have one living in my house.
They can't do any better than what they're
doing. He has an intellectual disability?
No, he can't. You said he can't go anywhere else. I have one living in my house. You're talking something different.
This is an individual who's a 20. Well, no, your guy's going to be 20-something pretty directly.
Yes.
Well, 25-something. Is there a class above that? These are individuals who rely on the minimum wage, you know, pretty much a lifetime. Can't just switch jobs the way you guys describe it. May have a vehicle. So, you know,
additional training? You're ignoring that. I didn't say switch jobs just to switch jobs. I said, what do they bring to the table? How do they increase their skills? I think where the government owes you something is to provide training to help you get a better job.
I agree with that.
Well, I think I would agree with that. I think training could help.
I mean, let's find a more, instead of going to 12, let's go to 10 and use that extra, quote, $2 and put that into training and put that into an opportunity to let people that have not the money to go to college or not the money to go to a trade school or maybe don't have the transportation to go to the trade school have that opportunity then.
Yeah.
I would rather see the minimum wage go up. I mean, I'm not saying the minimum wage should not go up.
At 7.
I'm just saying 12 to 15 is starting to be a little bit, to me, the uncomfortable zone.
All right. Well, and all of this is for naught. You saw Jake Corman shaking his head no. Honestly, you know, I really appreciate the governor starting this discussion, and I appreciate everybody who's going to call us today about this. And Professor Rosu is going to be back on the show tomorrow with the chamber, and guess what? He shakes his head no. For some of the reasons you described, saying that for a certain, for a big swath of the middle class, it hurts those workers. But I think it's important. But anyway, all of this is for naught. Jake says it's not going to happen. The Senate won't vote for it. Neither will the House. And well, he doesn't speak for them, but he knows that to be true. So that's the end of this. All right, 1-800-795-9565.
That was quick.
What? Goodbye, Kevin.
Hey,
go sell something.
It was great.
Go
sell. Well, good seeing you guys.
Have a nice day, Kevin.
But don't you think it's kind of strange the governor does this every year? And yesterday he brought in child care workers to stand behind him because he wants to say, hey, this would help these people who help at daycares and so on. It'll help our children.
PR. That's
right.
What it is.
It's funny how he's still doing the PR. You know, he didn't do any his first 3 years, and then his last year he did tons, and now he's still at it.
That was his entire reelection campaign. It was based on nothing that here's what I've done until about 2 weeks before the election.
I don't know that it's PR.
Do you
PR,
think he's going to run for higher office? And that's why he's keeping this up?
Well, there's rumors going around that he is interested or that he may be a vice presidential candidate somewhere along the line.
Okay.
Well, there may be PR, but I'll tell you what it really is, and it's two other initials I won't go into.
All right. We got to take a quick break. We got two callers waiting. I'm not going to take any further ado. We'll be right back.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Welcome back to WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show on the Mark. Off mic. Joe and Kevin solved all known diseases and fed the poor, so we really appreciate that.
No, we
Joe fed the poor.
Poor.
I just solved all known diseases.
Kevin doesn't care about
we
the poor.
We charged them for a hamburger.
All right. Dale, you're on the mark.
So, our governor, if he does raise the minimum wage to 15, should I quit my job and be a son of pay chef at McDonald's, like putting coal in the fries?
But the governor's not going
nice
to do anything.
It
requires a legislature, so the governor
well,
doesn't.
Let's get one thing straight. We all know for a fact, everybody who has, you know, common sense, that the richest 5% in this country and the poorest 20% are all Democrats. So, in order to wipe out all private sector jobs,
we all know that, do we?
We know that for a fact.
Yes, we do know that. They control the weak.
Where'd you get that? Where did you find that statistic, Dale? I'm curious.
Just look it up.
Well, I'm asking you where you looked it up.
Right there on the internet. Look it up.
Oh, okay. Well, it's on the internet. It must be true.
And the poor 20% are all Democrats.
Okay.
So, in order, you know, they want to control the weak. So, in order, you know, the mom squeeze out conservative women's voice who helped create this country, made it great, conservative women, they're all being muffled by the media, and they're not even getting a chance to speak.
All
the liberals are getting all the voice. Conservative women don't even have a chance. So it's a shame that they're going to wipe out all private sector jobs because all these corporations are going to give $15 an hour for flipping burgers and putting salt on fries.
All right.
I mean, it's nonsense, and you guys even promote an argument. It's crazy.
All right, it's hard to argue with that, Lance. We got you.
No, that's not Lance. That's Dale.
Dale. Lance is next. I got my crazy men backwards. Good morning, sir. You're on the mark. Lance.
Hey, there. Why? The fellow was talking about this schizophrenic weather we have.
Who was talking about that, Lance?
Well, my neighbor was.
Okay. Well, we didn't hear him say it.
I was thinking, gee, this must be a bipolar vortex.
Oh, brother. Bad mental health jokes, please.
I'm glad you're several miles away.
Oh, brother.
But anyway, on the minimum wage deal, I can tell you just exactly what happened back in the 60s with this. I hired, my first real job was car wash course, you know, being like 14 or there. And in 63, the minimum wage was 85 cents an hour, and then it went to $1.10. So I worked at $1.10, and then in 1967, this thing went to $1.65. Now, something happened then. The people who were working there, the people that they hired, the entire, whatever you would call it, the type of person that they hired changed greatly. We did not have the teenagers, you know, with backwards ball caps and attitudes being hired. It was older folks, people who were moonlighting off of their other job.
When was that?
I'm talking 66, 67 in there.
Right. And if you go to a fast food restaurant today, you'll probably see half of the employees are over 65.
I think probably a lot of that had to do with the fact that most young people were sucked up in the Vietnam War during those years.
Well, not teenagers. You know, they'd hire you
17,
at
14. 18, 19.
Well, you can start working at 12 or something.
You were drafted when you were 19, I know.
No, but you were talking about older people coming into the workforce there, taking
those
jobs. That's
that
because there was a shortage of younger people.
It paid some money then.
All right.
We even had school teachers who would work there on the weekends because of that. Of course, back then a school teacher made, what, $4,000 a year or so. So it was kind of amazing that it appears to me a minimum wage there hurt the person that it was really supposed to help.
Well, yeah, Professor Rose, who talks about that very eloquently when he's on the show, that if you raise the minimum wage, it displaces individuals who are at the lower echelon of maybe the abilities or, you know, intellectual capabilities. That market gets pushed out because then the Kevin Herrs and the Joe McGranahans go back to work for $15 an hour because it's a pretty substantial supplement to their income. And then that displaces individuals who may have been able to work for $7 an hour, you know, and you know, probably live with somebody else. I mean, it's hard to sustain a household like that. All right, Lance, we got you. Thank you so much. Thanks for the call and the history lesson. Very much appreciate it. And the bad joke. We got it.
You know, my father worked at a fast food restaurant while I was growing up in the late 70s, especially, because, you know, he wasn't making that much money where he was working. My mother wasn't working, so he ended up taking two jobs at that and was working the night shift at the fast food restaurant at minimum wage. And you know, sometimes he didn't complain about the fact that he was making minimum wage. The only thing I remember him complaining about was the fact that he barely made enough money after he paid the taxes with the extra money he was supposedly bringing in.
Well, he may have been tired, too. That's wrong.
Well, he would go to work at 6 o'clock in the factory, come out at 3, switch over at 4 o'clock to the restaurant till about 11, 11:30, come home about a half an hour, and then go back to work again at 6 a.m. the next day for the full-time job. I honestly have no idea how he did that.
Also that you couldn't go to college.
No, I could. I chose not to,
all right.
I could.
All right. Well, we're talking about the minimum wage. Republicans say it's a non-starter, but the governor says we've got to do something. He's probably interested in some sort of a compromise, less so than maybe previous
years.
Why
does he say we have to do something? Why do we have to do something?
Well, because we're humans and we want to take good care of our people. If we have to have this, what do you call it, a floor or a ceiling on the minimum wage, you might as well make it at a reasonable
level.
Here's
the question. Here's what he's not saying. What percentage of people who are working today in Pennsylvania Pennsylvania are working at the absolute low minimum wage?
Well, I don't know. That's a very good question. It is a single-digit number, whatever it is.
We may be solving a problem that doesn't exist.
Well, that's true. Yeah, excellent point. Yeah, all these jobs going for wanting up and down 11 to 15. Every business says the help wanted signed out.
There are more jobs now than there are people to fill them. So that would pretty much indicate that nobody's working at the absolute low end of the minimum wage unless they bring absolutely nothing to the table.
I have no problem, again, starting the minimum wage at 10, not necessarily 12, and working your way to 15 very quickly. I think it has to be a gradual increase.
Well, 2025 is the governor's idea. That's maybe what you're talking about.
You're talking about the year, not the total amount.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking, too. I'm hoping you mean the year.
yeah, the year 2025.
But,
yeah, good point.
And I'm okay with a gradual increase, but I think we start somewhere between in that 10 to 12 range, but the gradual increase to 15 has to be a big, long-term look and not a next 5 years type of view. It can't be like a dollar a year type of thing. I just don't think the economy can sustain that right now, especially in this area where you see jobs right now at $9 an hour or $9.50 and they're struggling to get people in. What's it going to be like when you put it into 10 and 12? Are you going to be struggling to find somebody in there? And then what about the people that are making 15 and 16? Do you have to pay them more?
Well,
here, listen. Here,
sounds like play-by-play.
Start it there. And then have Saturday, first day of deer season, be on Saturday. There.
We're going to start it there, but it looks like the governor's got a foul, so he's going to go to the free from third line. But Jake Corman won't let him from the outside. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thanks for having me. Thanks. Appreciate the chance to, you know, take over the show.
Now this go to work.
This is WDKOK Sunbury.
News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Joe McGranahan.
Greetings and welcome on board the WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show. On the Mark, we cured all known diseases, fed the poor, and fixed the economy while we were off mic. So there's really not
that
too much.
We don't need to go on with the program, right?
Not too much to talk about. Well, people can tell us are wrong. We always have that hope. On the Mark, sponsor of the Sunbury Motor Company. Check them out at sunburymotors.com. Our hometown pharmacy's toll-free line is wide open. Call us 1-800-795-9565. The toll-free line is sponsored by the Shade Mountain Pharmacy in Mount Pleasant Mills, the Norrie Pharmacy, Danville Pharmacy, Lewisburg Pharmacy, Bloomsburg Medicine Shop, and Trutz Pharmacy in Mifflinburg. You're welcome throughout our show to email us at onthemark@wkok.com, and you can text us at 70236. In the news, a coal township man is in critical condition after a head-on crash on Route 61 in Shamokin Township Tuesday. Stonington troopers say 55-year-old James Ware lost control of his minivan, crashed into a pickup truck that had a plow on it. Now Ware's in critical condition. Recent discovery at a Milton home could help solve the ongoing Barbara Miller cold case. Matt Cotrillo has that story.
Todd Matthews with NAMIS, the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, tells WKOK bone fragments were found inside a basement wall removed from a Front Street home in Milton. Matthews says NAMIS is unsure whether the bones are male, female, or even human. NAMIS opened a file for Miller last June, and Matthews tells us DNA from Miller's family members is in the database. He says it can take months to determine if the DNA in the fragments match DNA in the system's database. Matthews says if there are any findings, law enforcement agencies will be notified. Former Sunbury Police Chief Timothy Miller tells us the bone discovery is, quote, huge and could be an important piece of the puzzle to help bring the case to a conclusion. He says he believes Barbara Miller was killed in her Sunbury home, then her remains were buried in the wall of the Milton property. He says he stands by his 2017 search warrant for the Milton home, where eight cadaver dogs indicated the wall contained human remains. The state attorney general's office took the case in November, saying at the time it would review the matter carefully. Matt Cotrillo, News Radio 1070 WKOK.
State Game Commission has given preliminary approval to opening the buck season on a Saturday rather than a Monday. The commissioners Tuesday gave preliminary approval to an opening day of Saturday, November 30th, the Saturday after Thanksgiving. If the change wins final approval at an April meeting, the firearm season would be expanded to 13 days, including three Saturdays rather than two under the current schedule. To accommodate the expanded deer season, commissioners would reduce the late November turkey season by 2 days. Also winning preliminary approval, we're expanding the mid-October muzzleloader and special firearms deer seasons to include bears, an expanded 2-week archery bear season, and expanding the bear season from 4 to 6 days in most of the wildlife management units. The Game Commission is concerned that the present laws won't wipe out all of the deer and the bear, so they're expanding those. I'm sorry, that's a little editorial comment.
Doing?
No, they don't want to wipe. Well, they do want to wipe out all the deer and the bear, but that's just
Lawrence's. Well, then there would be no hunting season.
Right, it would definitely hurt license revenue. All right, and finally, you have to read this carefully. The steady loss of local newspapers and steady loss of local journalists across the country contributes to the nation's political polarization, a new study has found. With fewer opportunities to find out about local politicians, citizens are more likely to turn to national sources like cable news and apply their feelings about national politics to people running for the local town council or state legislature, according to research published in the Journal of Communication. The result is less split-ticket voting, or people whose ballot includes votes for people of different parties. In 1992, 37% of states with Senate races elected a senator from a different party than the presidential candidate that the state supported. But in 2016, the first time in a century, no state did that, the study found. Quote, the voting behavior was more polarized, less likely to include split-ticket voting if a newspaper had died in the community, according to Joanna Dunaway, a communications professor at Texas A&M University, who conducted the research with colleagues from Colorado State and Louisiana State University. Researchers reached that conclusion by comparing voting data from 66 communities where newspapers have closed in the past 2 decades to 77 areas where local newspapers continue to operate. So around here, we haven't had any newspapers close, right? We still have the Daily Item and the Milton Journal, Lewisburg Journal, Standard Journal. There we go.
Snyder County Times.
Right, and Bloomsburg Paper. They're still going. Danville News got absorbed by the
Daily Item,
but they're still there. So, but they're saying that if you don't get all that information out about your local officials that the newspapers provide for readers, that it results in more split ticket or less split ticket voting, where people vote, Republican or all Democrat.
That's part of what the story said. The other part was that there are fewer people who are doing the reporting and fewer employees in these organizations, and I think you would agree that's true.
Right. Well, yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah, all the newspapers around here are downsized.
Right.
And of course, and there's fewer readers. Most of the readers of the newspaper are older, 40 and 50 plus. I don't know what the Daily Item circulation is now, but it used to be about 25,000, and now it's probably about 15,000.
Somewhere in that neck of the
woods. And the radio ratings are lower. We still have a good percentage of the radio audience, but we have to fight harder for the individuals to listen to our news and our candidate interviews and so on.
Yeah, no argument.
So
it's a different world.
Well, and I think
someone once said there's not broadcasting anymore. It's all narrowcasting.
Ah, okay.
Looking for a niche.
So this, I think this coincides a little bit with what's happening to us politically related to Twitter. You talked about yesterday how journalism had changed and Twitter had forced that change. I know some of the journalists that I know say, oh, I hate tweeting. They hate being in the back row of the courthouse tweeting, but they got to do it. And you can't send out, balanced, objective, sort of full stories. You just send out little tease sentence or pithy sentences that are likely to get, people to pay more attention to your stories later.
Did you have a chance to read the article that one of our listeners sent you yesterday when you questioned me about the inaccuracies in the media about President Trump?
No, did you?
Well, they sent it to you.
Right. No, I saw it. Yep,
some 60,
definitely.
What was it, 30 or 60 instances.
Oh, okay, where the media lied about the president.
Well, they were incorrectly reported. They jumped the gun, rushed to judgment. I think that's what the Twitter article was about yesterday, that there's this insane rush to be the first one out there, and I think the Covington, Kentucky kids are a prime example of that. Everybody was condemning them up first. That kid has a face that you should punch, and then all of a sudden there's another side to the story, You know, but everybody looks for the part of the story that fits their narrative.
So maybe the president's right?
No, I think that there is a problem.
No,
in this
he's
country.
Still wrong.
No, I don't know that he's right or wrong, but I mean, let's face it, he does some pretty weird stuff. Now everybody's up in arms today because he's saying he knows better than our intelligence experts what the world situation is. Does he or doesn't he? You know, there have been times when the American president has been misled. I think a classic example of that, where the intelligence community misled a president, was when the intelligence community told John F. Kennedy he should go ahead with the Bay of Pigs invasion because once those troops hit the beach, the people of Cuba would rise up and throw Fidel Castro out. Didn't work well. You know, there's been more than one instance where the intelligence community was dead wrong.
Well, the weapons of mass destruction debacle, although President Bush kept that going more on his own once it was clear that the intelligence was flawed.
Right, but it was the intelligence. What are you doing over there?
Oh, I'm sorry. I am checking off the I'm doing check marks here.
Okay.
I don't need to do that. All right, 1-800-795-9565. We got one caller waiting and another one on the line. Let's see. Read from right to left, if you don't mind, Joe.
Okay, here's a question. Why aren't moderate Trump fans coming out and condemning the racist attack on Jesse Smollett and other similar attacks? Why are they so quiet? I don't know who he's talking about. I even heard Fox News condemn the attack.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, there is this giant pause to triple check that the story checks out. I don't know if people are just skeptical or whatever, but I know I was watching some of the coverage last night on MSNBC, and they did talk about this, but they did not talk about it as though it was guaranteed a factual thing. They said this was reported, this may have happened, they're investigating, the video doesn't show it, that he says, and he's got a very credible story, and I hope he, you know, I don't hope he was attacked. That sounds wrong. I hope his story is true in the interest of truth, but of course, never. I hope he's okay. But in any event,
you're tap dancing
but
here, buddy.
Right? That's a good word for it. That's what they were doing. They were not saying that this absolutely definitively happened. They were just saying, you know, this is a reported crime. It's under investigation.
Well, Chicago police say they have been unable to locate any video cameras that show any part of it, and the two people they show walking down the street may or may not be involved.
Yeah, aren't the right ones. Yeah, not only do they not have video of the attack.
They weren't carrying a jug of bleach or had any rope with them. So,
and they weren't wearing a mask. But anyway, yeah, not only do they not have video of the attack, so that's noteworthy, but they don't have video of the men anywhere else in the neighborhood at that time. Buzz, you're on the mark. Go right ahead.
I just wanted to back up a second about print news about the daily item circulation and so on. I had the experience recently of having a really nice story done by Rick Andes about this Veterans Mentor program we're doing in Northumberland County Court. And it was a front page thing on Sunday a couple weeks ago. It was very, very well written and very accurate. And I noticed as the days went by, all the comments that I got about it from people were people over 50, with the exception of one young woman at a place where I work at 31, and I remarked to her, I said, gosh, you're the first person under 50 that said anything about this. And to me, that tells me that indeed, as you said, our print crowd is much older. And I really think that we need to find a way to encourage younger people to read newspapers. They're so important, but if they don't read them, I don't know how the papers are going to stay in business. Do you have any thoughts or any ideas of what newspapers are trying to do to increase circulation
What they're doing is increasing their online presence in the hope that they'll attract them there. You know, but it's kind
of... I like a newspaper in my hand. So, I mean, one of the only things I don't like about traveling our countries is that I can't have a morning newspaper in my hand because I usually don't understand the language of the country that we're in. But, you know, the morning paper is like coffee to me. I need them both to get my day going, and I wish I could think of some way to infuse that in the younger generation. That's all I have. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
All right. Thank
you
so much.
Well, I can tell you I read four newspapers every morning, and I read them all online. I have online subscriptions.
You don't touch any of them paper-wise.
Well, the daily item, I mean, I get the, it comes to the house, but I usually read it online long before it arrives at my door.
Well, maybe if you would just sleep in a little longer.
Maybe, but...
All right,
the
Dale.
The bird gets the worm.
Dale,
I
you
have
get
quite a
a
worm collection.
Dale, you get a minute of fame.
I just wanted to bring some clarity to people. Okay.
Good.
Okay, there's many facts, but there's only one truth. And I want people to listen to this, because when you got the Democrats selling all these government programs, government funding programs, and all of the lawyers' government funding programs, the truth is, it's taxpayers funded. Period. Period. That's it. There's no such thing as government funding programs. It's what the lawyers and the Democrats are trying to feed you. So just wake up. That's all I have to tell you.
All right,
next time
thank
you'll
you.
Be able to hear that.
I like that. That's an interesting
that's
point.
If
well,
I ever heard
sure.
Clarity. That's clarity.
No such thing as a government-funded program. It's taxpayers who contributed their hard-earned dollars
to the government,
and now the government's giving it back to certain people. Well, that's what our good caller talked about yesterday when he said he doesn't like the payday loans for the
right.
income taxes, because you and I are subsidizing the. So, you know, they're cheapening our or lessening the impact of our generosity in from Washington. All right, 1-800-795-9565 is the telephone number. Stan is awake, so we got some texts. We'll read those on the radio, and we are going to be talking about the. We can wrap up any discussion about the minimum wage. One of our emails talks about that. We got about a half a dozen emails, so we can read those when we return. But we'll take all comers on the phone. 1-800-795-9565 is our telephone number. We talked about the impact of newspapers and how the individual newspapers in towns were a place where a newspaper died, that the voters have less local information there. 1-800-795-9565 is the Hometown Pharmacy's toll-free line.
January, February, March, April, May, June, July, and August, September, October, November, December. Those are the months of the year. What's with making resolutions, whatever they're called, only at the beginning of the year? Grandmom says there are 12 whole months to make changes and that everyone should start simple. She told her friends at her yoga class how simple it is to get their prescription switched to our hometown pharmacy. Then they won't waste hours waiting in line. There's a good revolution. Don't waste time.
Discover the Hometown Pharmacy difference today. Lewisburg Pharmacy, North 2nd Street, Lewisburg. Shade Mountain Pharmacy, Route 35, Mount Pleasant Mills. Bloomsburg Medicine Shop, Market Street, Bloomsburg. Norrie Pharmacy, Duke Street, Northumberland. Trotz Pharmacy, Walnut Street, Mifflinburg. And the Danville Pharmacy, Mill Street, Danville.
Did I say revolution? I meant to say resolution. Oh, you heard what I meant to say. I wonder if any of my friends made resolutions. And what's with old Lang Syne? This kid wants some new Lang Syne.
Welcome back to WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show. On the mark, Mark Lawrence here. Mr. Joe McGranahan is across from me. Rob Center is fabulouser by the day. We got an email that related to our minimum wage.
The text. Rumor has it that Smollett lied about an attack by two white guys wearing MAGA hats. He is known to be a Trump hater. My guess is he was looking for publicity. Let's face it, who's ever heard of him or the show he's in? Time will tell, and when he's proven to be a liar, will there be apologies from the left? He didn't say the guys were wearing MAGA hats. They kept yelling, "This is MAGA territory."
And they said this. They said this is MAGA country.
MAGA country, right?
Yeah, they didn't have hats on. I saw the word mask today in one of the reports. So maybe the guys were wearing masks.
Who was that masked man? That was the Lone Ranger.
Those were Donald Trump supporters.
And then you don't want me to do the email first? Okay.
Well, callers come.
All right,
first.
Dan, you're on the mark.
Hey, good morning, guys. You talked about split ticket voting. Why, I remember I split ticket years ago when the parties were fairly close. I often said this. But now the two parties are so far apart, most of us wouldn't agree with the other party hardly at all. And this last election brought it out more so than ever. There's a big difference. The Democrats are going more to socialism, and the Republican, the base now is capitalist, you know, and the free enterprise system. And that's why people, I think, are less likely to split their ticket. There's big choices to make.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think we don't, why I didn't split, I haven't split a ticket in the last couple elections, because I didn't see anybody on the other side that I agreed with. Now people voted for Tom Wolf, now they're getting what they voted for. I didn't vote for his party.
Right, yeah, they wanted good leadership and a raise in the minimum wage, and he's trying to make that happen. So, yeah, you're right. But yeah, I see what you're saying. That's an interesting point, you know, as I think candidates are more polarized. You know, if you think of the senators that we used to have here, maybe like a John Hines or an Arlen Specter, they were probably a little bit more moderate. Of course, Specter at the time was a Democrat, and I think some Republicans might vote for him. But now, you know, I mean, everybody's pretty clear. Bob Casey's as Democratic as you can get, and Pat Toomey is pretty Democrat, although he does some bipartisan, what I'm going to call them, gestures in Washington.
Yeah, he goes across more than some of the other ones, and Casey's completely in the tank of the liberal. I don't know how many times I called him about votes. He never calls me back, and he's so partisan he don't even want to talk to someone on the opposite side of the aisle anymore. I can see that.
So you fault him for not calling you back. Are you a senator?
No, but the thing is, he could call back once in a great while.
Okay.
And say, well, I can't vote for what you propose because of this or of that. But I never even get one of his aides when I call him, and they don't call back. All the other candidate people and senators and Congress, I get their aides, or they call me back. Every one of them calls me back, or I get one of their aides, which I'm satisfied with. But that's how partisan politics is today, and you can see by your callers how they can't stand Trump, or some of us like me, we defend a lot of his policies. You know, we like what he's doing. And that's where we're at today. It's hard to talk to people on the other side. You know, they don't like to hear what I have to say and why we voted for a guy like Trump, which they despise, you know. So we are more divided.
Absolutely, and we have a good newspaper around here. So the division, the division comes from other sources.
Right, and your station isn't biased. I don't see any problem there with your news. Or I like the local papers. They present both sides. The Daily Journal I get, and I get the Item. They both present both sides of the issue. They're not partisan. You know, and they have in between writers too, like George Will. I call him a token conservative. He used to be more conservative, but he writes in there, and they have Ann Calder in the Daily Journal, which is a Trump person. They also have other ones. I can't say the one gentleman's name. It's Mike. He writes the extreme liberal position, and I think they're well balanced. And I also agree with the previous caller that I like a newspaper in my hand in the morning with a cup of coffee. I couldn't get used to it any other way. It's tradition.
All right.
It's not that it's wrong to read the paper the other way on online and stuff. But
well, you save $50 if you only read it online, though. So,
all right, yep, thanks, Dan. Appreciate your call.
I'm on the old wall phone this morning talking with you. The technology that goes back a good maybe 70, 80 years
right.
or more because our power's off up here.
Oh, that phone was installed in the 40s, I guarantee you. All right, thank you so much, Dan.
You guys have a great day.
You too.
Appreciate the
we
call.
We got a couple of emails pending, or do you want to go to break?
No, we're good. Go right
okay.
ahead.
Fella says, good morning. I was subscribed to the Daily Item for years. This year's renewal was $269 for home delivery and online, or I can get it just online for $200 a year, or I can switch to the news item. Cost for online is $100 per year. I also get most of the news that is on the paper for free listening to the TV and radio. Signed, Bob. And then another writer says, the people in Washington State are now complaining about the increase in restaurants and other businesses since the minimum wage there went up to $15 an hour. I have to wonder why people stay in minimum wage jobs when there are better options around. Recently, KFC on the Strip was offering $9 to start, and many industries in the area are advertising for workers at much more than that. Signed, Dave on the Hill.
Well, that's part of this discussion is how many people are earning $7.50 an hour. It's got to be a very small sliver of the workforce.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not a lot of people. But if the minimum wage goes up to $12 an hour, it's going to consume a lot of other workers around here who are getting $9, $10, $11 an hour, $10 an hour to work at some of the lower wage jobs around here. So their wages will go up. All right, we have open phones right now. We can take a quick break. We are sifting through some emails that we received. Is this the one you just read, the wages one?
Yes, that's the one.
All right, we have one that relates to intelligence agencies. I imagine this topic came up. Joe, would you mind reading that? Let me move it over here closer
to
you.
Dick says, CIA, FBI, National Security Agency officials all testified before a Senate committee on Tuesday, and for the most part, all found a much different view from the president on worldwide security and global threats, and surprise, surprise, his tweets this morning are still defending his own assessment of the situations. These highly trained professionals with the best intelligence available, no less than the president and his advisor, not sure exactly who that is, most likely his son-in-law. I know he often says, I know more than anyone on every subject. He has pretty much forced all of the military advisors out the door because in many cases, he didn't like their advice. But sadly, many of the followers love the guy and would follow him right off the edge of the earth, the one he thinks he owns.
He thinks he owns the earth. All right, we got you. All right, thank you for the email. We have more emails pending. We'll read those. One relates to the U.S. tax code, and the earned income credit is the subject of the next one.
But I got one here that I'd like to touch base on. You earlier, one of our listeners said, all right, we'll take a break.
Well, what's the first sentence
of it? All right, well, it's about this Representative Ilhan Omar. She is now being slammed for saying that she chuckles when Israel is called a democracy. So the Democratic Party now has this apparently a semi-militant Islamic woman in the House of Representatives who is coming down pretty
She's
hard
chuckling.
On Israel. Yeah.
She's chuckling in the U.S. Congress? Well, we can't have that. All right. We're going to have that funny story. When we return, we have open phones.
It's rather serious, actually.
Oh, I see. Okay. Sorry. We have Joe's last day on his retirement shortened week before he gets a retirement lengthened weekend. So give us a buzz. 1-800-795-9565 for open phones. As my German grandparents used to say, call in and give them the what for. Welcome back. WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show on the mark. 1-800-795-9565 is our telephone number. That's 1-800-795-9565. You're welcome to email us, as one individual has done, at onthemark@wkok.com.
All right. Dave on the Hill says, the politicians have made the tax code so complicated, most people are afraid they are getting screwed by the government if they do their own taxes. They figure these tax prep companies know all the secrets of the code, so they'll come out better if they use them. Well, there's some room for that thought.
How about that? Okay, so back to your item.
Yeah, back to this. This was Representative Ilhan Omar, who is an Islamic woman who, on the floor of the House, was given permission to wear her traditional garb, which had been in violation of House rules for many years. She's now saying she chuckles when somebody refers to one of our closest allies in the Middle East, Israel, as being a democracy. Jim Hansen, who is president of the Security Study Group, who also served in the U.S. Army Special Forces, accuses Omar of being an anti-Semite and lamented that she's a member of Congress. He says she is an anti-Semite. Give her an opportunity to speak her mind, and like most bigots, she'll tell you. She laughs at the idea that Israel is a democracy and compares it to Iran. Shameful to have those ideas represented in Congress. One of our earlier writers said, well, where's the right wing when it comes to this attack on Jussie Smollett or whatever? Where's the left wing's outrage over this? You know, we need to be a little more concerned about these things. She should not be expressing, in my opinion, anti-Semitic opinions in the floor of the House.
But what if she feels that way and has an informed opinion? Now, what's wrong with that, then? You don't think women should speak their mind, in other words?
This is amazing to me, because you are the one who says that white privilege would stop some of these other people from talking or speaking out. Somebody who wears a MAGA hat, for example, you would find a problem with them, but you have no problem with her. I have a problem with both. If you're going to be a bigot and you're going to be, you know, anti-Semitic, I don't care where you're going. I don't like what you're doing.
I don't have any problem with people wearing a MAGA hat. I'm just saying there's individuals that now associate it with only the reprehensible aspects.
But you believe it is the new symbol of the KKK.
No, it's a new symbol of the Confederacy.
Okay.
That's a difference.
Anyway, I think she needs to rein herself in, because she has been... You know, she's elected to represent people of the United States, not Israel.
Right.
I'll agree
but
with you.
But they elected her, and they know she has all these opinions.
Well, they elected Donald Trump, and he has all these opinions, and yet you find fault with them.
Well, his opinions are wrong.
Okay, and hers are not.
Well, I don't know about that.
I think you laugh when you hear that Israel's a democracy?
That's a good one. I don't know.
Anyhow, that's
a different story.
That struck me as interesting, and this one really strikes me as interesting. It's written by Judge Anthony Napolitano, who is a contributor to Fox News, but he is a former judge. He said, last Friday on a quiet residential street at 6 in the morning, the neighborhood exploded in light, noise, and terror. 17 SUVs and 2 armored vehicles arrived in front of one house. Each vehicle had sirens blaring and lights flashing. The house, which abutted a canal, was soon surrounded by 29 government agents, each wearing military garb, each carrying a handgun, and most carrying high-powered automatic rifles. In the canal were 2 amphibious watercraft, out of which more heavily armed government agents came. Circling above all this was a helicopter, equipped with long-range precision weaponry and high-powered spotlights. 4 agents approached the front door of the house, 2 held a battering ram, and 2 pointed their rifles at the door. One of the agents shouted and banged on the front door until the terrified owner of the house emerged barefoot and wearing shorts and a T-shirt. He was greeted in the dark at his open front door by 2 rifle barrels aimed at his head. This was not a movie set. It was not a foreign city in a war zone. It was not the arrest of the Venezuelan opposition leader in Caracas. It was Middle America, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. The agents worked for the FBI, and the target of this operation was not a drug kingpin or a terrorist operative or a kidnapper of babies. It was a peaceful American in his own home, a political operative and longtime friend of President Donald Trump's named Roger Stone.
Aha.
Now, isn't that incredible that they would send all that firepower? I mean, obviously, this was an act of intimidation. He said the judge goes on to point out that in most cases where the attorneys representing the man are known, and the federal government was well aware of who was representing Mr. Stone, they would call and inform him of the indictment and say, you know, make arrangements for this client to surrender himself.
Right.
But here they decided to go in.
So you see him at the courthouse coming in, and a million cameramen are there?
Well, sometimes. But, I mean, at least he's given a chance to turn himself in, and, you know, he was in jail. After all this, he was in jail for just a few moments before he made bail and walked out on his own recognizance.
Mm-hmm. Does he have guns in his house? Is he thought to be dangerous
no,
or something?
Not at all.
I recall him saying at the time that he has a handgun or something, but that still doesn't mean that you need to have all that kind of response.
Well, there are actually more FBI agents sent to arrest Stone than Navy SEALs sent to kill Osama bin Laden.
Well, yeah, the helicopters only had a dozen men on them or so.
And you were pretty sure that Osama bin Laden had a gun.
Was that a Freudian slip?
It must have been.
All right.
But seriously, don't you think
so? They overkilled it on the register. Why isn't there a big outcry about this overkill, other than from the good judge?
Well, I think because it, you know, the Democrats are the people who don't like the president or who believe
the Democrats control the FBI?
No, but I think they have obviously been in league with them over the years. They certainly looking at the 2 lovebirds who...
Well, these are the president's agencies. He should make something happen on this. Although then it'll look like he's favoring the witness, you know.
Well, I
or
think
favoring the indictee.
Yeah, he's in a bad position here with respect to that. But I mean, there may be something to this. Maybe Stone is guilty of every charge. Although he's pled not guilty, he may be guilty of everything they accuse him of. But this isn't the way you go to someone's house. I mean, a white collar, at best, it's a white collar crime. And it's not a man who's violent. He has no criminal record, no prior history of arrest.
Did they battering ram down the door?
Or no, he answered.
No, he answered.
But yeah. I think if it had been another minute, they probably would have kicked his door down.
Right.
But I mean, seriously, don't you find that, as an American citizen, don't you find that troubling? I do. He may be a crook. He may deserve to go to jail, but I don't think he deserves that in front of his family and his neighbors.
Well, I guess I'm used to seeing police excesses when it comes to force. You know, you see a lot of these towns now want these riot vehicles that are armored and so on. You know, and you wonder if they need them. Now, I am not so smart that I can say they don't need them, so I can't say that. But I'm just saying, you wonder if each and every little shik-shinny town needs to have its own armored vehicle, you know, army surplus vehicle, tricked out, you know, to be a SWAT vehicle, that kind of thing. So, you know, I guess I'm used to seeing police overkill. But, you know, this is worthy of investigation to see why they did all of that. I mean, there's, you think of the money that was spent doing that. All those guys are well paid.
It was an act of intimidation. I mean, they wanted to scare everybody else that's a target of the Mueller investigation.
Okay, right. So lie to the grand jury, and guess what?
This could happen to you.
We'll get your battering ram down your front door.
And as Judge Napolitano points out, it wasn't that he wasn't accused of kidnapping babies or doing any or being a drug kingpin.
Just lying to the grand jury.
Just lying to the grand jury.
Which in the Trump administration is like drinking lemonade. That's very common.
Come on.
Al, good morning. You're on the mark.
You forgot to add, Joe, that CNN was tipped off and they were there with the cameras rolling.
Yeah, I forgot about that. They were there.
And that read just like a script in a movie. Just like a script in a movie where you're taking down somebody really, really big in the mafia or something with all that manpower. That cost a lot of money, and it was all big show with the FBI and CNN and our corrupt way of doing things when it comes to President Trump.
Well, now, the president's ultimately in charge of the FBI. Why doesn't he do something?
Because how much crap would he take if he did something?
Yeah.
I mean, he's sitting back watching it happen and kind of just, he's playing it smart. I can't believe his composure with everything that's going on.
He's unusually restrained, in other words.
The only thing that he disappointed me on was he said he wasn't going to go after Hillary. But I'm taking solace in the fact that he said he wasn't going to go after Hillary, but he didn't say, I'm not going to send somebody after Hillary and the gang. And we won't have a country until Obama and Hillary and all these people in the FBI that are pulling this shenanigans to try and get an elected president. I don't care who his name is, Humpty Dump, Humpty Trumpy or whatever, and he sits on his wall, but I don't care who it was.
Humpty Trumpty wants his wall.
You don't do this to a president. It's not a king that you're overthrowing. I mean, this guy was elected by the people of the United States and it holds the office of president. And he's... You know, he's doing a marvelous job of keeping his composure and getting things done with this barrage of stuff that goes on every day. I just commend him. And I'd say more power to him.
Well, going back to Roger Stone, I thought it was interesting that CNN happened to be there. I mean, obviously they were tipped off this was going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think they had a camera crew stationed out front of his house every morning at 6 a.m.
Now, they were tipped off, and now this morning they're bussing the immigrants in from Mexico City. They just keep bussing them from one district to the next district until they get them up here. And there's another 12,000 invading our borders. That's the way I look at it. That's the way he looks at it. When people come across your borders without permission, it's an invasion. If I go on your property and you tell me to stay off your property... It goes from simple trespassing where you're just a simpleton and you trespass by accident and they decide to charge you anyway because you probably gave them a rough time, or to where I'm going to go wherever I want to go and I don't care if it's your property or not. That's aggravated trespassing. That's a
Yeah, it's criminal
trespassing.
That's
a whole
trespassing.
Other charge. That's criminal. That's criminal trespassing. And defiant. Defiant.
Which you've never done, first, I might add.
And then criminal if you do anything.
And you've never done criminal trespassing, right?
I didn't do criminal.
No.
I did defiant trespassing.
Oh, there you go. That's another topic.
Yeah, just another misdemeanor. And then I was arrested on four accounts of assault. Assault and all kind of charges. They had me going to prison for 27 years and 90 days, but that's another story.
I hope you're writing all this down so your book will have all these chapters in it.
Oh, my God. I couldn't find anybody to write it. We'd have to change the name to protect the guilty all over the whole county. I mean, it's just... And then the governor of Virginia topped the governor of New York. He says, now we can let the babies get comfortable and then we'll kill them.
Yeah, he actually did in an interview. He talked about how the mother could give birth to the child.
The guy from... Yeah.
And that
you can let them get comfortable, resuscitate them, and then the mom and the doctor will sit around and have a cup of tea and decide if they want this baby to live or not.
That's the truth.
This gift from God.
Get out of here.
Do we want to keep this gift from God, or do we want to send this one back?
He said it in an interview in Virginia on a television station.
Yeah, he was being filmed maybe for radio, too. It looked like it was a radio station.
I'm sorry. But they were videotaping him or videoing him for the TV station.
What?
He wasn't under pressure. And, of course, he actually said it. He said it calmly, clearly, and deliberately. And then afterwards, he said his remarks were taken out of context.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Al. Get back to work. Go do some wallpapering or something, will you, please?
I'm on a mission to feed the birds.
There you go.
Well, that's an
important job, too. All right. Thank you so much.
Yep.
1-800-795-9565. We'll take a quick break. We got two texts in. I believe we are out of emails. So if you want to email us, join us now at onthemark@wkok.com, or you can send us a text at 70236, or you can use the toll-free line 1-800-795-9565. What do you think of one of our U.S. Congress members? Is dissing Israel and laughing at their claim that they're some sort of a democracy. We have Humpty Trumpty wants a wall, but the U.S. Congress says no way. So
we'll have to work on that. Humpty Trumpty sat on a wall.
No, he doesn't. He wants a wall. He doesn't have it yet.
Humpty Trumpty wants a
You work on that.
All right.
1-800-795-9565. We'll be right back.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Humpty Trumpty wanted a wall, but U.S. Congress fed no wall. No way.
Oh, that doesn't rhyme.
No.
Humpty Trumpty wants a wall. Let's see. Into Nancy Pelosi, he must fall.
Ouch. And you have a pet peeve.
Well, the word trespass, it's trespass.
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 That's how it's pronounced. Right.
He was charged with criminal trespass. You know, if I go on the air and say he was charged with criminal trespass, people are going to say, what in the world is wrong with Lawrence?
Well, you could say trespass.
Well, they probably say
it's
that
two
anyway.
Two syllables, tress and pass.
Okay. Trespass.
But I think that's better than trespass. That sounds like you're passing around a truss.
which we do at the nursing home.
Do you?
Okay. All right, one of the texts.
Oh, you must have a riot over there.
Start at the bottom.
The FBI used more men to arrest Roger Stone than the Obama administration sent to help the defenders of the consulate annex in Benghazi.
It stands to arguing Benghazi. So
right.
Thank you, Stan. We'd forgotten about that.
Another one is, Stone is accused of lying to Congress, yet other liars to Congress are still walking free. Imagine that. Any guess as to who those other liars work for?
President Trump?
I think President Obama.
Oh, did somebody in Obama's administration get indicted recently? Somebody was just saying...
Well, I think the FBI people, I mean, you have the two lovebirds and they're lying.
Right,
well,
that's not recent. But, okay. And another email. Back when we were talking about minimum wage, Governor Tom Wolf was interested in raising the minimum wage to $12 an hour this year and then 50 cents every year up to and including the year 2025 when it'll be $15 an hour by then.
Says somebody has to do these minimum wage jobs. They work hard at these jobs and most never get a raise. It's up to the employer to raise the higher paid employees, but these lower paid jobs deserve a raise. A lot are older, retired folks.
All right. Well, yeah, that a lot of retirees take jobs. But see, the fast food restaurants around here, most jobs aren't offered at minimum wage because there aren't enough workers. And if you were doing $7 an hour dishwashing at one location, why not go do dishwashing at another place for $9 an hour?
If they're paying the $9, you'd be a fool not to go.
Right. So one sign said $11 to start for a job. So, you know, and of course, a lot of jobs are going wanting, as you mentioned, and wages are starting to creep up. I'm not sure that that impacts in whomever, whatever the slight number of people are that are earning the minimum wage, but we know that wages are making a comeback. We'll hear more about that tomorrow on WDKOK on the Mark Show. Bob Garrett will be here from the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce. Let's see, U.S. Congressman Dan Musier is going to check in from the 9th District. He's a Republican, just got elected, so he'll talk about the latest jobless numbers. And Professor Matt Rosu is going to call in as well. He's calling in at 8:50, and we will ask him about the minimum wage. I know one of his important talking points is that raising the minimum wage would be a negative outcome for a lot of people. So that's tomorrow's On the Mark. Ben Reichle is going to co-host. Rob's going to do his thing, as he always does.
And I'm going to be on my retirement lengthened weekend.
Right. So what do you got plans this weekend? Anything big?
It's trying to stay warm.
Okay.
That's my goal.
Well, it's going to be 43 on Sunday, so
then it shouldn't be too
hard. It shouldn't be quite a challenge.
No, but I think that, you know, we'll go back to the minimum wage thing. I think the governor realizes it's a non-starter, which makes me wonder why he threw it out there, except to maybe gin up his base.
Well, somebody said he's a potential vice presidential running mate.
That could be. Yeah, that could be.
So they want him out there for that to help get Pennsylvania back on the Democratic side.
He certainly would be a viable contender for the Democratic nomination. I mean, he carried a key state. With a fair number of, electoral ballots. And he's a popular guy.
Well, and I like his decision-making. I just don't see him as presidential material.
Well, nobody saw Harry Truman as presidential material, but he did a pretty good
job. But look what happened. Okay, well, maybe that's it. You know, I always fail.
No one saw Donald Trump as presidential material, but look how well he's doing.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, you're right. Yeah, good point. So don't ever elect...
Don't ever say he's not presidential material. We don't know what presidential material is until the people vote.
Well, and sometimes the voters have their say despite Lawrence's worthless wisdom mixed in. All right, Joe, thank you so much. Appreciate another week of hard work. The Shade Mountain Pharmacy, Trotz Pharmacy, Norrie Pharmacy, Danville Pharmacy, Bloomsburg Medicine Shop, and Lewisburg Pharmacy sponsor the Hometown Pharmacy's toll-free line, so we thank them for their sponsorship. We thank Rob Zetter for being a fabulous producer and you for being a great listener. This is WDKOK Sunbury.